I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. My dad's drink, not anymore, but when, like, the one that I remember as a kid was he would always get, you know, vodka on the rocks with lime. That was his thing. And he would keep a bottle of vodka in the freezer. And if there was cocktails or he just wanted a drink, it, like my brother and I, we would make the vodka on the rocks with lime. It's occurring to me as we're talking, Tiffany, that I don't have my kids making drinks for me, and I feel like I've really blown it as a parent.
I get tears in my eyes because it's like it's so bad what our parents did, but it's also like it was a trust, you know, the trusting thing. Like, yeah, you got to get your kids to bartend.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And before we get to this show, I have some very exciting news to share. Now, when the Stitcher app went away a couple months back, a lot of you lost access to The Sporkful back catalog. You've been writing and messaging me saying, how do we listen to our favorite episodes or go back for ones we missed the first time around? Now, I'm pleased to tell you that I have the answer. We're going to be dropping one episode from the archive this Friday, and then we're going to keep doing that every other Friday going forward. A little bonus listening for your weekend. We'll be pulling episodes from the deep freezer, popping them in the microwave for you, which is why we're calling them reheats. Get it? Not repeats, reheats. I'm a little too pleased with that one. Anyway, are there certain episodes from the deep freezer that you want to hear? Let us know. We're taking requests, okay? Send us an email or voice memo to hello@sporkful.com. Tell us your first name, your location, the episode you want to hear, and why. Again, that's hello@sporkful.com. Reheats start this Friday, November 17th. All right, let's get into it. Today, I'm talking with Tiffany Barrier. She's an award-winning bartender and cocktail educator who goes by the title The Drinking Coach. As we get into the holidays, we could probably all use some coaching on the drinking front, right? Some new cocktail ideas to up your game. Tiffany's going to share those. And she'll tell us about her new book she contributed to entitled Juke Joints, Jazz Clubs, and Juice, Cocktails from Two Centuries of African-American Cookbooks. But first, let's back up. Tiffany was born in Grand Coteau, Louisiana, and raised in Houston. Growing up, she'd spend weekends and summers back in Louisiana, where there were often big family gatherings.
When you ask for something to eat, it's coming. What I can just say in a few words, it's seasoned and it's fresh and it's fulfilling. You can literally taste love in every bite you get.
What about the drinks? What kind of drinks were you seeing growing up?
It was brown. It was in a glass. Very rarely was it clear. And if it was clear, it had some kind of juice inside, grapefruit or orange juice.
So I'm picturing at a family gathering, like a small table, and there's kind of like one or two handles of liquor on the table, and then there's mixers.
Yeah, that's it. That little card table that folds out, booze and mixers.
And you're telling me that the booze was typically brown, so it would be whiskey, bourbon, maybe rum?
Yeah, whiskey, bourbon, cognac for sure, and right. And rum, and some jar of something unmarked.
Did you ever find out what was in there?
I mean, it was most likely shine. It was most likely some shine that was, you know, made with some kind of, you know, grain or vegetable that my uncle put together and said, we should drink this.
And like, what was your perception of that little card table as a kid?
I knew it was going to be a good night. I loved it. I couldn't wait to see my mom set up or whoever set up for the night. But I knew when the table came out and the ice chest came out, it's about to be nothing but laughter, great music. It was always a party and the energy was just electric. It was a vibe. I grew up in a very non-toxic drinking home, which, you know, a lot of people can't say that. Not everyone has the blessing of we cheers a glass and we had a great night and went to sleep.
Were you ever put in charge of mixing drinks for the adults?
Yes. That's my job. I was the, I laugh about it because I was a gopher. I was the one. Like, this is a chore. I grew up in the country, so kids are made for chores, as my family would say. We made you for chores to get done, cleaning up and grabbing things. So for sure, after the first couple of rounds and, you know, my cousins and I and family are playing, you hear your name screamed across a garage or porch or whatnot. And it's like, we need another round.
In 2000, after she graduated high school, Tiffany moved from Houston to Atlanta. She started college but dropped out her freshman year and began to work as a bartender. Her first job?
Applebee's Bar and Grill. Casual greatness. I'm 18. I'm actually not supposed to be bartending because you're supposed to be 21 to touch booze. And it was fast money and it was awesome. And I was in love.
What exactly did you love about it?
People. People were so random. I could just literally ask someone, well, how was their day? And it would just go on and on and on. It was good stuff. It was bad stuff. It was juicy gossip. It was drama. I loved to just ask questions, pretty much interview everyone at the bar. And that made for great convo and more booze.
The role of the bartender is a powerful one. And there is something unique about that role of the bartender.
It's beautiful. It's like, you talk to someone, you may not want to talk to them. They may not want to talk to you, but we're kind of in each other's space. So we kind of do the polite thing for a second. Hi, hey. And then before you know it, you're complimenting each other. You're watching someone else. And then all of a sudden you pawn them on other people.
So you would be like connecting different people at the bar and getting them to talk to each other?
Absolutely. That's like my thing to do. Like even if there's a day I don't want to talk. Of course I want to talk and chat, but before you know it, I'm like, hey, Dave, you know, you should meet. It's funny you say that. Eric just said like this, almost the same thing. You guys should. And then boom, we've got a whole like network or relationship or possibly a baby in 9 months. I've seen that.
Have you kept track? How many babies can you take responsibility for, Tiffany?
I have two babies out there in the world that I've connected.
Really?
To the bar.
Yeah. From those early days tending bar, are there stories from customers that have stuck with you that you still remember?
There's a few. A lot of them are kind of private. So I've heard some big shifts in people's lives. Those intimate shared moments are the ones that stick to me and stick really close about change and what life's all about. And there's even some sad ones about, you know, raising a glass to certain people that people love. And those are the ones that stick hard to my heart.
The restaurateur Danny Meyer, who opened Gramercy Tavern and other high-end places in New York, he also founded Shake Shack. He talks a lot about hospitality versus service. And I suspect maybe this is something you've also given thought to, Tiffany. What do you see as the difference between hospitality and service?
Service is an act. Hospitality is a feeling. I don't think I've ever said that before, but that's it right
that,
there.
That was so sharp. It sounded like you said it 100 times.
I know. When I say it, I was like, wait a minute. Write that down right now. Like, when you are hospitable and they're in your space and you're in their space and we are like, you know, plating and dropping and picking and cleaning and laughing and sharing. You know, it's lovely when a server or a bartender takes care of you and you leave and you're like, you know, the food is great, but man, I feel good because of our person. And that's what hospitality is all about. There's this thing, which I, in my mind, when I started training folks, was like, I call them UPTs, unexpected personal touches.
Can you give me a couple of examples of UPTs that you can add in between those moments of service?
Yeah, in my early days, it was simple things like don't ask if someone needs more water when you can see the glass is like clearly empty. you know, when people are stepping to the restroom, it's walking them there. It's, you know, unraveling their silverware for them. It's maybe even bringing a little treat, you know, that's taking care of their kids. That's, you know, bringing over a sample of a drink you're working on. It's charging their phone. I mean, this is Tiffany, but I'm giving you a hug sometimes if you leave. You might get a hug from me. You might get a high five from me. Just doing things that are unsaid, giving them what you would want back.
In 2008, Tiffany got a job that would change the trajectory of her career. It was at a new restaurant in Atlanta called One Flew South. Tiffany came aboard as a bartender and helped open the restaurant. The plan was for it to be a fine dining spot with upscale Southern fare, sushi, and an extensive bar program. This would be a change for Tiffany. She was used to working in more corporate places like Longhorn Steakhouse. But the biggest difference was the location. One Flew South would be inside Atlanta's airport, which, it should be noted, is the world's busiest airport.
People are zombies in the airport. They're either full speed ahead or they're just floating. And we made this location a place where you could completely forget what's going on. But we didn't feel like a restaurant in the airport. We felt like a real restaurant with an airport outside of us.
What are the unique challenges of doing fine dining and an upscale bar in an airport?
Purveyors is a huge challenge. How do we get our things? We don't have a back door dock. I mean, we do, but it's the tarmac. Like, that's where our things come from. And we were a sushi bar as well. So chef had to have tethered knives to the walls. So everything.
Wait, all the knives in the kitchen had to be tied to the walls?
Yes. Yes.
Because of like TSA stuff?
Absolutely. It was very tough.
Oh my God, that never would have occurred to me. And like for slicing limes at the bar or whatever, like every knife had to be on a string?
Handcuffed, for sure. And twice a month, someone came by to make sure they were handcuffed or retighten them, sharpening them. We had to have someone come in and do that. We were FAA regulation. We were in an airport. If we do anything wrong, is a felony. So we had to be very, very cautious.
And then, what are some of the unique opportunities of running a fine dining restaurant and upscale bar in an airport?
Well, we're open 365, 7 days a week. So we are never closed. Money is running through there. So let's think about why we go to work and go to work to get paid. So that was really exciting to have this open schedule.
People also drink at all times of day in an airport.
All day long. I mean, we kept restaurant hours. We did open at a decent time. We opened at 11. We closed at 10. The door is always revolving. So we'd see people come in and then just leave. We'd be fully packed and then they would just go. And then be fully packed again. So it's just this beautiful like window and wave. It flowed like a beach. It just flowed like water. And we just really love to see people and send them off to Bon Voyage. Great travels.
About 2 years after she started, Tiffany got promoted to beverage director. Under her direction, the bar at One Flew South became known as one of the best airport bars in the world. And the restaurant was nominated for multiple James Beard Awards. Are there a couple of cocktails that you featured there that stick in your memory, some of your favorites?
Yeah, I got a couple of favorites that I remember. I did a sake vodka cocktail. It was a play on a classic Vesper. The Vesper is usually an equal part cocktail, vodka and gin with some vermouth. And I wanted to change it up and give it some kind of Asian influence, so I mixed it with sake instead. It was just a really light, fun sake cocktail that wasn't a sake teeny, which people loved. There is a fun drink that I made that was all yellow. I created it because everybody was really gloomy that 1 week. Travel was just awful and weather was bad. And I'm like, we need color. We need variety. We need something that hits the dining room and it makes people pop. I used some golden beets in this drink. Everything in the cocktail was yellow. Lemon juice, beets, yellow chartreuse, St. Germain elderflower. And I used some gin and I called it the Yellow Brick Road. Oh, I have another drink called Arrival Time. People saw it and they're like, I gotta have it. It was tequila. There was thyme inside.
I love tequila and thyme.
I'd love to drink it now. A thyme syrup, well, thyme infused with agave, Campari, lime juice, reposado, and just a bar spoon of orange liqueur. And it was just bright and herbaceous and boozy and red. And a big sprig of thyme that just hung out of it. And so people love to chew on that.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
As Tiffany became more established at One Flew South, she also started entering bartending competitions. These are events where bartenders show off their skills and creativity. Often the contests are sponsored by liquor companies, so bartenders have to work with a specific spirit. And these competitions can be intense.
They want to see the wheel reinvented 5 times. And you got to get creative. And you not only have to get creative in the glass, you've got to get creative with your presentation. And you win money. I've seen everything from $1,000 to $100,000 in wins. I've seen cars. I've seen bikes. I've seen trips. And my first competition, I bombed pretty hard.
What happened?
I just was not prepared. I thought you just make a drink in front of people like you're at a bar. And my competitors were using like beautiful stemware, and they also had a presentation. And I at the time just thought you just win by getting up there, making a good drink. And it was way more than that.
So the second competition you enter, what happens?
I came with it hard. I came with it. I watched the person who won the previous competition, and I saw everything from a tray and polished glassware and snacks and a recipe card. And I believe she had aromatics, like an incense burning. And I was like,
Oh my gosh.
I was like, wait, we can like do a thing. And I'm a woman that loves detail, and I'm like, oh, we're doing this.
So what did you do for that second competition? Do you remember what you made?
Yeah, it was, wow. It was a Four Roses bourbon competition. The story of Four Roses is beautiful. It's a romantic story about, you know, the guy who created Four Roses and had a crush on this woman, and he hit on her for forever, and she always turned him down. And then his final ask, he said, if you come to the ball, I know you'll be with me, but when you come, wear a rose. And she did, but she wore a few. So I made the drink that I thought she drank at the ball.
That's good.
That's
a good story.
I'm glad it did. Because everyone was talking about the brand and talking about, you know, Mr. Jones. And like, everybody was just going in about the brand, which I did. But then I did that, I said, but what about her? And let's just imagine her coming down, and let's imagine them, you know, connecting in that, you know, Cinderella moment, and imagine her going to the bar, and this is what the bartender's serving. So I created this rosemary and cherry old fashioned.
Oh, I love rosemary in a drink.
It was just fresh. It was so simple, but so good. I had fresh rosemary stem. Once you know the essence of rosemary is just as soon as it touches something, it bleeds in. Rosemary, some cherries, some bitters, Peixo bitters from back in New Orleans. It was called Rosy Cheeks.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So I started connecting me and like this, just where can I get in there? I did what I've always wanted to do at the bar, but I did it on on showboat style. Like, and that's what competing is all about.
So how did you do in that second competition?
I placed first. I won. I won. I redeemed myself. I brought it in. And when they said my name, I was like, okay, it's on now. And I couldn't stop competing after that.
These competitions help Tiffany connect the craft of making cocktails with the history and storytelling of cocktail culture. And when Tiffany leaned into that, she began to catch the attention of the renowned food journalist, Tony Tipton Martin. Coming up, Tiffany makes her first cocktail for Tony and does not get the reaction she was hoping for. Stick around.
Ooh, advertisements. Yummy.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. And you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com. Where travels come true. A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. At Boar's Head, delicious is in the details. And you see that in their incredible selection of hummus flavors. Boar's Head hummus is expertly crafted to achieve the perfect balance of creamy texture and refined taste. You can taste those chickpeas, you can taste the tahini, you can taste a little bit of acidity. It's got it all. I especially love their roasted red pepper hummus made with fire-roasted peppers. You can even taste a little bit of that char. It's perfectly dippable. It's perfectly spreadable. This is the kind of thing you always want to have on hand in your refrigerator. Dip, scoop, spread, or smear Boar's Head hummus to your heart's content. Hummus so extraordinary, it can only be Boar's Head. Compromise elsewhere. Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. Hey, is there someone in your life who loves Cascatelli? I mean, you could also be that person. Either way, there's good news. We now have Cascatelli posters that I signed in our merch store. You can buy the poster solo or as part of a bundle with two boxes of Cascatelli. We also have t-shirts, onesies, even Sporkful wrapping paper. Everything you need for the Sporkful and or Cascatelli lover in your life this holiday season. You can find it all at sporkful.com/merch. And if you're looking for some inspiration for Thanksgiving dinner, stay tuned to the end of this very episode. I'm going to talk with Chef Darnell Reed about some Southern and Cajun dishes that he loves that get a ton of flavor and depth thanks to Tony Sachery's Creole seasoning. Okay, back to my conversation with Tiffany Barrier. In 2016, after 7+ years running the bar at One Flew South, Tiffany left her job. It wasn't an easy decision.
I truly wanted to stay with the company and do other things, but it didn't go out that way. I think it was a mutual. Well, I don't think it was mutual. I left pretty upset. It was not mutual. I'm trying to soften this blow really quick.
Tiffany says when she was working there, she could see the restaurant was doing brisk business.
But I just wanted a slice of it since myself and my team and my chef and his team were the yolk of it all. I was like, we should be getting more money than this. Like, I just don't want tips. I don't just want publications. I don't want awards. I want a piece of this. Being the creative director at this point or just being a part of, you know, ownership in the building, I really wanted that. And that wasn't the conversation.
So you left.
Bounced.
And where did you go? What happened next?
I cried for a couple of weeks. I tried to figure out what I was going to do.
After a while, Tiffany began thinking back to when she was working at One Flew South. A friend there would watch Tiffany serve guests and saw how she was always sharing something, a tip for drinking it, a bit of history or context about one of the ingredients. The friend told Tiffany, "You're like a coach, a drinking coach." At first, this idea that Tiffany was a drinking coach was sort of an inside joke between friends. But now Tiffany would put that name to use and strike out on her own. Today, as the drinking coach, she teaches people about bartending techniques, cocktail history, and just how to make incredible and creative drinks. She makes cocktail menus for pop-up dinners. She hosts mixology classes at corporate events and workshops. And she works with brands on cocktail recipes. Now, I had never heard of a drinking coach before, but as soon as I did, I thought, I could probably use some coaching. You're a drinking coach, Tiffany, right? You're the drinking coach. Right now, with your permission, I'd like to engage you in a little lightning round.
Let's do it.
I'm going to ask you to be my drinking coach. You ready?
Okay.
I'm going to name a scenario, and I want you to tell me what drink you suggest. Ready?
Let's do it.
We're going through the seasons here. First off, winter. It's a Tuesday night. You had a long day at work. You're finally sitting down on the couch to watch some TV. What are you mixing?
It's Tuesday, right?
Tuesday, yeah.
Taco Tuesday. So we're going to tequila. We're bringing okay. tequila out of the margarita space, and we're going to do a split-based tequila old-fashioned with Blanco and Reposado, equal parts, a little bit of agave, heavy on the Ango.
Angostura bitters.
Angostura bitters. If you've got some chocolate bitters around, we're going to do that. Two dashes of Ango, two dashes of chocolate, some agave. Stir that nice and cold. Big rock. orange.
Ooh, I feel like I can taste that. That's like, all right, that sounds amazing. All right, next one. Ready, Tiffany?
That was hard.
All right. Spring. It's a Thursday in the early evening. We just changed the clocks. So it's one of those first evenings where it's light out later. Early spring was kind of a warmish day, but now it's cooling. It's cooling off. But the sun's still out.
Wow. I'm visioning this day. Wow. Okay. It's the first day. The clocks have changed. We're going to be outside. We're going to sit on the porch. It's not too hot yet. It's gorgeous. Let's do something fun. Let's do like a gin cocktail with some grapefruit. Maybe some fun syrup that we've got around. And, you know, we've had some beers left over in the fridge. Why don't we put this over ice and top it with our favorite beer?
On top of the cocktail,
yes. So what's going to happen as soon as that beer is poured over ice, the effervescence is going to calm down. But it's going to be tasty and it's going to be boozy. But we're watching the sunset. Like, this is good. This is... we're waving to the neighbors right here. Like, this is a good...
All right, summertime, Saturday night. It's nighttime, but it's the middle of the summer, so it's still warm, even though it's dark out. It's kind of muggy, humid. What are we drinking?
I don't want any judgment from anyone. I don't want any judgment.
This is no judgment zone here, Tiffany.
What's wrong with a good old Long Island iced tea? So when I say that, I know, but just follow me here. We do like a half ounce of each vodka, rum, gin, something orange, and tequila, right? So we're still like in the 3 ounce era here. We do a fresh lime, a fresh lemon. We shake it up and we just splash, not Coca-Cola, maybe some cranberry. We're fun. We're giggly. We're free. We're safe. We're sharing this. We're laughing. And we just like jump back to the past with even a better taste with a good Long Island iced tea.
Okay. All right. Final season in the lightning round. You're doing great, Tiffany.
Okay.
Final season is the fall, where we find ourselves today. It's a Sunday afternoon. It's sunny. It's cool, but not cold. What are we drinking?
Ooh, this is where I am right now. We're getting in there because this is one of my favorite times to make cocktails because the flavor profiles are just so warm and fuzzy, but we're jumping in the rum category. We're getting into aged rum, which brings out so much caramel and so many baking spices.
Good.
It's so, so good. And let me tell you, if you sip a nice over 8-year-old rum neat with a cold apple cider, whether it's non-alcoholic or not, these pair perfectly. I'm telling you.
So separately, but like the apple cider is a chaser.
Yeah. We're doing a whole like old school style. If you can see my style, I like it simple and fun.
Yes.
But having a nice rum on the side, just, you know, we're sipping. The game is on or whatnot. It's Sunday. We're hanging out.
I love that.
Sipping neat is one of my favorite things to do. Sipping neat is just really enjoying. You're not, you know, jumping in. We were younger. We did shots and stuff like that. And you sip neat, you really have a chance to really appreciate it. But when you pair it with something nice and cold or effervescent, it really takes your palate on a journey.
Along with her work as the drinking coach, Tiffany's also been using her platform to tell stories of African-American cocktail and drink history, stories that get left out of a lot of cocktail books. On Instagram, she's written about Juniper Evans, a master cider maker born on Thomas Jefferson's plantation, and about Birdie Brown, a bootlegger who made moonshine during Prohibition. Tiffany also began to connect with other storytellers, like the esteemed food journalist Tony Tipton Martin, who wrote the book The Jemima Code. Tony's been highlighting the historical contribution of Black chefs and cooks in America for many years. In 2015, around the time Tiffany was getting ready to leave One Flew South, she attended the inaugural Soul Summit, a conference about African-American foodways on Juneteenth weekend, founded by Tony Tipton Martin. Tiffany was asked to make one of the drinks for the event.
I called it the Bayou Sour. It was a play on the Trinidad Sour, a classic cocktail that comes from Trinidad and Tobago. It is a heavy, bitter cocktail. Usually you see in cocktails just a couple of dabs of bitters. I used 1.5 ounces of bitters in this drink. It was Peychaud bitters out of New Orleans, a Haitian recipe, which was aromatic bitters with a lovely touch of cherry. So it was red.
Of course, red drinks are a tradition for Juneteenth celebrations.
I was batching this red drink back in the prep room, and Tony walked by me and she said, "You're making a red drink?" And I said, yes, ma'am. And she just kind of shrugged and walked away. And I was like, oh my gosh, I should have done some, you know, stirred and boozy. I should have been bartendery.
Right.
And here I am with them, some simple drink with bitters and cane syrup and rum. I just felt, I thought it was very simple. And she didn't really say much about it.
Tiffany spent years thinking about Tony's reaction to her cocktail, convinced that Tony was somehow disappointed with it. Then, a few years later, she met Tony again at the James Beard Awards.
She introduces me to someone and says, "This is Tiffany, who I was telling you about." And I'm like, oh. And she says, she made this. And she described my drink to the detail. She's like, she made this amazing drink for Soul Summit that was like Haitian, but Creole. And, you know, she read my drink to me. And her eyes were just sparkling and my eyes were sparkling. And that just, I mean, talk about my heart just filling up like Tony Tipton Martin sees me. And we had a great night that night. Good champagne and dancing.
Tiffany also began to contribute to Tony's books. First to the acclaimed book, Jubilee, Recipes from Two Centuries of African-American Cooking. And then to Tony's new book, Juke Joints, Jazz Clubs, and Juice, Cocktails from Two Centuries of African-American Cookbooks. Tiffany worked with Tony to help decode and modernize cocktails from decades and centuries ago.
I was able to really just connect her to this world I'm involved in. You know, back in the days, recipes were written very, very basic in the way they describe them. It's kind of like a chef, you know, a cookbook, a pinch here, a drop there. And in beverage, we saw things like a lump of ice. Like, what's a lump of ice? Like, how big is that? We saw, you know, a pony of, you know, vermouth. What's a pony?
Turns out a pony is not a pony-sized serving of liquor, which I think we can all agree would be too much. It's an ounce. Working with Tony on her latest book, their relationship deepened. And now Tiffany's working on her own book, all about color in cocktails, the way the color of ingredients in a cocktail can affect the taste, but also affect how you feel about a cocktail. And the book will also highlight the contributions of people of color in the spirit and cocktail world. So Tiffany's star continues to rise. This past September, the International Association of Culinary Professionals announced a new award, the Tony Tipton Martin Award, or TTMA, which provides a grant and mentorship to an emerging food writer. Tony got on stage during the ceremony to present the winner of the award.
So it is my pleasure and honor to introduce the first recipient of the TTMA, Tiffany Barrier. Many of you know that Tiffany and I have been working together since we met many years ago at a Southern Foodways Alliance symposium. Our friendship has grown, and our professional relationship is the ultimate expression of reciprocal mentorship. With this grant, it is possible that the next voice you hear on the subject of black booze will belong to Tiffany Barrier. Congratulations to Tiffany.
I mean, whoa, from Tony Tipton Martin, full circle moment that, you know, she saw me. She's been listening to me. She's also attentive to this beverage industry and the black beverage industry and the impact that it has on this industry. And for her to give it to someone, her first one, for it to be a recipient that's not in food, but in beverage. I want to curse right now. Holy shit, that's massive. We deserve just as much space as the culinary world because we are liquid culinarians too. We are just as creative. We have a story and we've been drinking forever.
That's Tiffany Barrier. She says she'll be using the grant money from the Tony Tipton Martin Award to work on her book. You can find her on Instagram at The Drinking Coach. And if you're going to be breaking out your card table bar for the holidays, Tiffany's got a cocktail for you. It's called Flannel Weather. It's got tequila and chai and cider. Oh my God, it sounds so good. We're going to put the recipe on our Instagram page at The Sporkful and in the aforementioned newsletter, which you can subscribe to at sporkful.com/newsletter. That way you'll also know when my pastas and signed cookbook go on sale. Next week on the show, I head to the restaurant Enoteca Maria. It was opened by Jody Scaravella, second-generation New York Italian. At first, he invited Italian grandmothers to cook in the restaurant. But soon, word got around. And now, the chefs are from all over the world. And they're all grandmothers. That's next week. While you wait for that one, check out last week's show from our friends at the podcast Proof from America's Test Kitchen. They report on the 5-year quest to create a battle-ready pizza, one that can last for years in the military environment. That one's up now. Check it out. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Editing by
Nora Ritchie.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
And our intern is
Julia Russo.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Colin Anderson and Nora Ritchie. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Jason Carver from Albany, Georgia, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
All right, so we're in the Luella's kitchen. This is where the magic happens. I love Cajun flavors. So when I started writing my pasta cookbook, I knew I wanted some of those spices in there. That led me to collaborate on several recipes with Darnell Reed. He's the chef and owner of Luella's Southern Kitchen in Chicago. On a recent trip to Chicago, I stopped by the restaurant so Darnell and I could test two dishes together. Both of these recipes call for a big helping of Tony Sachery's Creole seasoning. Tony's makes everything taste great, but you'll especially love it in Darnell's dishes.
So this is the vegan dirty orzo. You have some Beyond meat, some roasted mushrooms. We serve it in the restaurant vegetarian or vegan, either one. But when we do it, it's dirty rice, but because we were talking about the pasta book, I thought dirty orzo. I like this one better than traditional dirty rice now, by the way, too. I like this more than I like the pork version.
Really?
Why? And I even tell customers that. I think it's the mushrooms, honestly, because I roast the mushrooms and everything.
Tony's Creole seasoning isn't spicy. It just adds tons of flavor. It's like all the flavors you could want together in one shaker. All right. Dirty rice with orzo going in. This is so good. I love how peppery it is. Next up, we're trying Darnell's Cajun crawfish carbonara, made with my own cascatelli. Darnell's restaurant, Luella's, was the first restaurant in America to put cascatelli on its menu, and they used it in this very dish. I love the idea of taking a classic carbonara and just giving it this major delicious twist, adding crawfish and Tony's Creole seasoning.
So we have the cascatelli, we have the guanciale, we have the crawfish, I mean your egg whites, your egg yolks, your cheeses, a little garlic shallot going on.
I've actually never watched carbonara made before my very eyes.
Okay. So basically, you're using the heat of the pasta to kind of make your sauce. It's kind of a pan sauce, you could say. The sauce is made from the richness of the eggs. So you go a little heavier on the yolks than you do the whites, which we're going to do. And then you have your cheeses. I have a little Parmesan and Romano.
Then you add the Tony's Creole seasoning.
So this will be the guanciale, which, like, you may not always be able to find that. So I will say use pancetta if you can't find it.
I feel like the consistency of the sauce is perfect.
Thank you.
Because it's creamy but not heavy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it has a nice thickness and a nice mouthfeel, and it sticks to the pasta. But, like, I feel like I could eat this all day and not feel like blurg. Days like this, I don't regret my job, Darnell.
Yeah.
And I have to wait till my cookbook comes out for these exact recipes. But I'm happy to tell you that Tony's has similar dishes on their website that are perfect additions to your Thanksgiving table. There's dirty rice stuffing or dressing and a crawfish fettuccine that might just make you forget mac and cheese was on the menu. So, tis the seasoning for your favorite holiday dishes, whether you're cooking turkey, tofurkey, ham, beef, dirty orzo, or crawfish carbonara. The best bite you're going to taste this holiday season is the one seasoned inside and out with Tony Sachery's. For more than 50 years, Tony's has remained family-owned and operated, carrying on the tradition of authenticity and flavor through its line of Creole seasonings, marinades, dinner mixes, and more. All of Tony's flavorful products are available at TonySachery.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.